This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Welcome to the Press Row. Behind the scenes stories from the world of sports media. Press Row. Insight and interviews from around the sports world. Now here's your host, Jonah Siegel.
Welcome back in the Press Row. Jonah here out in Seattle. The morning after game one of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Today's guest is Kevin Weeks, former NHL goalie turned broadcaster. Super stoked to talk to him about his career, parents, you know, emigrating to Canada from the Caribbean, growing up in Toronto, turning into a goalie, making it to the NHL, transitioning over to a broadcaster, now becoming an insider. So much to talk about. I'm very passionate about the goaltending position, what's become of it. So sit back, relax, and hear what Kevin has to tell me. Welcome back in the Press Row. It has been an extended welcome back. For those who don't know, our producer has been abroad in London, England, not London, Ontario, studying abroad his second semester junior year. Nice. And we let him do that. And earn some stripes, what have you, and didn't want to occupy his time and make him do this work in the middle of the night, so to speak. So we are back. Happy to be back. Back in the audio studio here in the podcaster blogger basement, as they say. But welcome back. It is, I'm time stamping this because we're probably going to talk a little bit about last night's playoff hockey game. Game one of the Stanley Cup. So it's Sunday morning here in the Pacific Northwest, 8 a.m. Pacific time, 11 a.m. on the East Coast, for those of you following along. I am super stoked. Somebody who I've been hounding for a long time, which is in my nature. He is Kevin Weeks, former NHL goaltender. He is current co-founder of Speaks, a new digital marketing agency, along with his wife and partner. You know him better as the latest, greatest hockey insider. He likes to flash the Batman logo all over Twitter when he has breaking news. You see him on the NHL Network. You see him on ESPN. You see him on TSN, and you hear him all over the place. Kevin, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Well, listen, I owe you dinner for that intro, so that's already a given already. But good morning from beautiful Miami, as you're in beautiful Pacific Northwest out there in Metro Seattle. So yeah, top of the morning to you, man. I know you live down here in the 305. You had mentioned to me yesterday. So another beautiful morning down here in South Florida.
Well, it's truly awesome to have you here. As I jokingly say, we've tried to do this numerous times. It's great when schedules do align. It's good to see your smiling face. So let's start, you know, you grew up in Toronto, mm-hmm. made your ranks through lots of goalie stuff. Mm-hmm. How difficult was it as a goalie? Like, we joke all the time about kids, parents pushing their kids, hoping to, you know, for lightning to strike twice on the same day, either to make it to junior and or pros. Is it easier, and not easy, but, and there is a distinction, but is it easier for goalies because it's, there are fewer of them? Is it an easier, and goalie is a miserably hard position, but is it easier if you're good to advance?
Fair question. I would say that it's, nothing goes unnoticed. Very few things go unnoticed, including you as a goalie. There's some benefits to that, to your point, for sure, because if and when you perform really well, everybody knows. everybody's like, oh my God, she was great in there. She was kicking. She had a great game, 35 saves. Wow, what a great performance. This, that, and the other. But the other side of that edge, that knife's edge that you're on, is when you don't play as well, or even if you play fairly well, but the team doesn't get the result, quite often you're going to wear the goat horns or there's going to be a lot of scrutiny. So what's interesting for me and me and my family's journey in the game is when my parents emigrated from Barbados in the Caribbean to Toronto.
And just so I'm clear, you were an all-star on the Barbados hockey team, correct? Like you were number one in the league there, right?
Yeah, exactly. In the Mango League.
That's right.
The Mango League. Oh, man. Yeah, no, listen, I was fortunate in the fact that none of us in my family really had any experience in the game. So my mom, dad, then would be my younger sister would come along. We have an 8-year age gap. I'm older than her, but none of us had any experience in the game. So we really went into it. Fortunately, my parents were open-minded enough to let me play, number one. My dad played cricket back in Barbados and, you know, he played nationally and stuff. But as an athlete, at least he had the open mindset and my parents had the open mindset, especially at a time when there weren't that many black players or players of color that were playing. And fortunately, they were open-minded and they were hyper-committed in their own way, especially being immigrants. There's no real margin for error. There's no real extra resources. So they were very selfless already, let alone me choosing the most expensive position. And then with that, oftentimes they worked overtime. My dad worked at the chocolate factory became Nestle, but Laura Secord, 1500 Birchmill. And my mom worked at right by the DBP in Eglinton at Blue Cross. She was a claims adjuster. So really blue collar parents that worked exceptionally hard, trying to work overtime for time and a half pay to be able to pay for tournaments and gear and the whole thing. And they just sacrificed so much in that instance in their commitment to support me and my dream. So I was lucky that way. I wasn't getting the pressure that you alluded to at home. But here's what I will say. With some of the goat horns sometimes, I can literally like remember being 8 and being, you know, in the net at Chesswood Arena for Toronto Red Wings. And a goal goes in, even if it's like a 50-50 goal, but certainly anything under 50-50, what are you doing? Like I can remember that at 8, Jonah. And what's crazy? That same thing that you get at 8 or 6 is the same thing you get in the NHL. So that's the goat horns kind of that edge that you asked about.
All right. So I'm going to make a presumption here. Like you were born in Barbados, were you born in Toronto?
I was born in Toronto. My sister Renee and I were born in Toronto. My mom originally emigrated in 68 to Windsor, Ontario. And then she went back to Barbados. Her and my dad got married. My mom came back to Toronto. Then she told my dad, hey, just come back. Like, just come, just try it. Just try Canada. Just try Toronto. You'll see. Just try it. But meanwhile, she already had all of his immigration stuff already set up, unbeknownst to him.
Okay.
And I want to give you this, and for the viewers, as a paradox. My dad didn't want to leave Barbados because he was an overseer at Applewood's plantation. Now imagine, you're working on a plantation on your own island. And we already know, you know, the long history of plantations and certainly in colonialism. Mm-hmm. So my dad, you know, he was the overseer kind of that would oversee the plantation. They had a record factory on the back of the plantation, WIRL, which is West Indies record label. My dad's a big music head. So in his mind, he's like, I'm driving a Land Rover. I'm overseeing this plantation. We have a music factory on the freaking plantation. Why am I going to leave to go to Toronto? And then that's
where there's this stuff called snow and it's cold.
Yes. And I got to start all over and we're starting from scratch. And now my wife and I are starting from scratch. So in a certain way, again, the irony in that paradox of him not wanting to leave, but then coming and my mom saying, okay, now you're here. I've got all your immigration stuff. This is home. You're not going back. So my mom really called the shot and she called her shot to say, this is what it's going to be. You don't have any say in the matter. We're here. You're here. Let's go. Go get a job. Pull up your bootstraps. And the rest is kind of history.
Okay. So my question's irrelevant. You were born in Toronto. So who inspired you to be a goalie? Who was your guy?
There's so many. And I don't want to seem like I'm skirting the question. But Grant Fuhr would be the main one.
Okay.
Grant was so fun to watch. He was acrobatic. He was dynamic. He's clutch. He had swag in the net. He had that flavor to how he played. He was kind of must-see TV. had the best glove hand I've seen. And of course, all the success that the Oilers were having with him, Mess, Gretz, Coffin, that whole crew, you know, voted the best team in the history of the league. He would be my main North Star, but not only. I love goalies. I love the position. So Mike Palmatier was kind of similar to Grant Fuhr in that style. I referenced him in the broadcast last night with EJ Raddick in game one of the Stanley Cup final, by the way, when Bobrovsky had that two pad stack. I'm like, that's a Palmatier type. So Palmy, Mike Richter, Dominic Hasek, when he came in and just was all world, Patrick Waugh, but also another guy by the name of Freddie Brathwaite. And reason why I say Freddie, and Freddie was a really good goalie, but like Grant and I, we happen to be black, and Freddie was older than me, and Freddie's dad, both his parents really, are from Barbados as well. And my dad knew Freddie's dad from Barbados. So seeing Freddie burst onto the junior scene and then playing in Oshawa, I'm like, oh my God, this is closer than I think. Like this could be a thing. I'm literally getting goosebumps telling you the story. Uh-huh. So on some nights, on Sundays, if you remember, when the Big E was the rage, there's never been anybody like the Big E number 88, Eric Lindros. Yeah. And when he was in Oshawa, man, as a 16-year-old, man, sometimes we'd drive up with some of my buddies or my dad, and we go to Oshawa Civic Center to watch. And we're all mesmerized. The Big E's doing things you haven't seen before as a player that size, that speed, the combination, toughness. But in the net is this brother, and he's kicking, Freddie Brathwaite. And the Memorial Cup in 1990 at Hamilton Cops Coliseum, I don't know if you recall, but Kevin Butt started the game. He ended up getting injured. Freddie came in. My dad and I were at that game. Like, that was like a eureka moment. And from that point on, I'm like, for sure, like North Star, for sure, I'm going to play in the league. So I was inspired by a lot of different guys. But the fact that those guys happen to be black, happen to be goalies, happen to be as good as they were, that affirmed a lot for me of what my dream was, and kind of affirmed the power of my dream that it was a possibility. But I also think for some of the naysayers, even just innocently, so how are you going to play in the NHL? It's a white people sport. You're not going to. And that's from people that are of my color, too. That's even from certain extended family members and friends. And once those guys were doing it, I'm like, look at what they're doing. Do you not watch the Oilers? Do you not see Grant Fuhr? Did you not see Freddie Brathwaite? And that really kind of just add kerosene oil to my fire and my ambition, if you will.
I was so certain that the name Rick Kenickel was going to come out of your mouth, the greatest Detroit Viper journeyman goaltender. But
I played against him in the eye. He was a good tendy too.
I'll have to get over my disappointment. You know, you played in, I'm just looking off screen here, Florida, Vancouver, the Islanders, the Lightning, the Canes, the Rangers, the Devils. Mm-hmm. Why stop there? I mean, there's a couple other cities you could have tried.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
What was your favorite stop?
They're all different for different reasons. I think what I loved about maybe the Florida Panthers being here in South Florida, and we have a part-time home here, is the fact that they drafted me, they invested in me, they developed me. Billy Smith was our goalie coach and became my goalie coach, the legendary Billy Smith, Islanders legend. And having him really helped me a lot, not as much from the technical, but more from the mental and the psychological and having a bit more of an edge. And he was great, and he went to bat for me a lot. So this kind of was part of my foundation in a way. I would then say, once I kind of got established, because I couldn't win a game to save my life when I first started in the league. I had multiple games. You're a star of the game, one of the three stars. You play well, but, you know, the end result is winning. And I couldn't win a game to save. I couldn't stitch the entire 60 minutes together the way I was able to do in the minors. And that was really frustrating because I took a lot of heat and a lot of people were kind of mocking me. And as I said, if you can imagine being a black goalie at that time, the atmosphere then was certainly very different than the atmosphere is now, right? Publicly, the way in which we treat people, mental health, all these other things, none of those things were factors. And it was a difficult time. But once I was finally able to kind of get up and running, I would say my favorite spot would be the Carolina Hurricanes. And reason being is, like, my individual game at the time had gotten to a level which I'd been really working hard on with my goalie coach from back home, Sudsy Maharaj, who's the Anaheim Ducks goalie coach now. Sudsy, fellow Caribbean guy, he's a Trini, he's from Trinidad, played the position, played pro over in Sweden, teacher, like just great. He was so instrumental for me. But he had helped me in the off seasons back home in Toronto get my game to a certain point, to when my game was at that point when I got traded to Carolina in 02. They had Artur Zerbe, who was a stud there. But I remember Paul Maurice, current head coach of the Canes, Panthers here, who coached us with the Canes. He had coached against me in junior in the OHL. Jimmy Rutherford was his general manager. Mr. Karmanos was the owner. So there's a familiarity. And then he coached me in the CHL Top Prospects game in 93. So the way in which he treated me, the way in which he treated my family, the way in which he treated players and people, as you're seeing now, was very unique. And I didn't really get a lot of that to that point in my career. And he certainly not only fostered confidence, but he treated us with respect. I know that sounds kind of odd, but he was well ahead of the curve in understanding, hey, if I treat the person really well and really fairly and respectfully, odds are they're going to perform better for me. And of course, consequently, we ended up going to Stanley Cup final that 02. So that's why I would say that was probably my favorite stuff.
So to us idiot fans, how unusual is that? That people in the coaches and management actually do that. I mean, we hear stories, you listen to Overdrive and you hear stories about Pat Quinn and you hear stories about this coach or Mike Babcock, and you know, you hear stories about Mike Keenan, and there's guys who and you hear it in women's basketball.
Yes.
And there's awful stories in women's hockey.
That's
allegations,
true.
Allegations of people just being awful to their players, mental games.
Yes.
How unusual is it is it changing where people are actually good human beings and understand that you can coach to be the best, and you can use, you know, mental management, if you will, to bring out the best, and you can be hard on people, but that doesn't mean you can't be a good person. Like, how unusual is that today?
Well, that's a great question. I would say it was hyper rare in those days, certainly in my early years in pro and in the league. And I was fortunate where I had some stops where people were really great that way. You and I were speaking yesterday on the phone. We had a great combo. The folks in Detroit with the old Detroit IHL Vipers were great. John Torchetti, Steve Ludzik, they were great to me that way. John Torchetti was also great to me in Fort Wayne with the Comets in the old IHL. There's some places and some people. I mentioned Billy Smith. There are a few others, the late Brian Murray. But it was really rare. It was really, really rare. And it's almost. What happened was a lot of times they would disempower you. So imagine before you're playing, you could have a coach say to somebody, hey, you better not give the friggin' puck away tonight. I don't want you to be a turnover machine. Hey, I don't know, but your shot was looking soft in practice. Don't shoot the puck when you get the opportunity. You better pat. Like, bro, really? Like, what are you saying? You know, then you're saying that on the bench. Then you're belittling the player in the room. So basically you're double, tripling, quadrupling down on the negatives, as opposed to doing it, A, in a constructive way, in a fair way, in an accurate way, and B, in a way that's going to amplify the player. In today's game, I think it's improved. It has been improving, but there's still room for improvement. So again, let's take the Stanley Cup final, for example, Paul Maurice I mentioned, but this youngster, Knobloch, who's the head coach of the Oilers, he's very good that way. He's excellent that way. He's fair, he's firm, he's positive, he's uplifting, he's measured. But there's a lot of room for growth. It's better than it was, but there's still a lot of room for growth there, to answer you.
But how much of that is, look at who they're coaching, and that if they were coaching you or me, or they were coaching 30-year-olds, and they acted like Mike Keenan or those guys, that's one thing. When you're coaching 18 to 28 year olds today.
Yeah.
It'll work once, right?
Yep.
You can bite the head off the snake once and people are going to go, oh my God. But if you do it again, they're going to tone out, right? Like the player persona has changed, has it not?
Big time. Player empowerment's changed too, to your point.
And the money's changed.
And the bread, the cake, you know, it's different cake and you're getting your cake early. You remember, and I know you do, in our time, hey man, you had to wait till you're 32 or 10 years in the league, unrestricted free agency. And I said, restricted has become the new unrestricted, right? And now with that, a lot of these players are coming out of their ELC or ELS, and I know this is all your bailiwick here for sure, but they're coming out of their entry-level contracts, and a lot of them are getting, you know, the equivalent of those same deals that you had to wait 10 years for, unless you're really a superstar, let's say. So the market dynamics have changed, but also to your point, the people dynamics have changed. And what's interesting, yes, is a lot more of the power, the pendulum has swung in the favor of the players that way, which is a part and parcel why you see so many coaching changes now. Look at these coaching changes we've seen this last year and a half. It's been wild.
Okay, so in your opinion,
yeah,
and your role has changed from goalie,
yes,
to broadcaster, mm-hmm, to insider, and we'll talk about that in a second.
Sure.
Is the coaching changes more as a result of that or unrealistic expectations of ownership and management? You can't fire all the players, so we're going to make a coaching change.
That's right. I think it's a combination of those two, and it kind of varies in terms of the percentages on each individual basis, right? Because they're always unique dynamics. Coaching in Arizona is different than coaching in Chicago right now. Coaching in Chicago right now is different than coaching in LA, where there are high expectations right now. Of course, if you're in Montreal with my guy, Marty St. Louis, the Hall of Famer who I play with in Tampa, they're in a rebuild, so he has that buffer and he has them trending in the right direction. But that would be different than coaching in Montreal if they were a Stanley Cup contender right now. All of that to say, I think those factors, as you mentioned, are very fair and accurate. But here's the one thing that I would say, and especially to the listeners, and even to whether they're fan as listeners or people in the business, we're in the people business. It's not commodities. And believe me, I have family that work in commodities, and my wife's family's from Alberta. So a lot of them are oil and gas, medical, resources, everything else, devices, you name it. We're in the people business. It comes down to relationships. You have to be able to ultimately, you know, be fair, be firm, but empower the people around you so that they can really shine in their roles. And I think in years gone by, a lot of it was such a totalitarian type regime and almost like a dictatorship, where I think now in the environment, some of the smart coaches are realizing, hey, this is more of a partnership.
Well, don't you think back in the day, if you think about the most successful coaches,
yeah,
it was a dictatorship. If you think about Al Arbor, if you think about Scotty Bowman,
sure.
I'm trying to think of other, Pat Quinn, right?
Mike Keenan. Yeah.
They coached a certain way, and yes, the way that they coached was intimidation.
See, okay, let me piggyback that. Exactly. And that's the way the world was.
But here's the thing. They coached to player, not to players. And how Connor McDavid wants to be treated is very different, perhaps, than how Dreisaitl wants to be treated, which is very different than how Austin Matthews wants to be treated, which is extremely different than how, give me a name.
Than how Kopitar wants to be treated.
Exactly.
Dale Makar. But you see, and I love you saying this, and here's why. This is why I believe, and I'm of the mindset, based on my experience in the game, it's a long time now, a lot of it comes down to you need people that have exceptional soft skills. And you need to be able to understand, and I love your point, and here's why. You might have a player on your team that's Jewish.
That doesn't happen. I'm just kidding.
Hey, Zach Hyman, down the list. I can go down the list now. Come on now. I can go down the list. And I've had buddies back home that played in the Maccabi games. So come on. So listen, you might have players that are Jewish. You might have players that are Italian. What's the upbringing like? What was that like? How involved were the Nona? How involved was the Nona?
Yeah.
Cultural nuances. Okay, now we've got somebody that's French Canadian. We have somebody whose parents are Lebanese. Now we have, like, Nazem Kadri, for example. Now we have somebody who's Russian born, like my guy Dave Nemirovsky, Mike Nemirovsky. There's all these different nuances. And when you're well versed in the soft skills, if you don't know and you don't really understand, you'll ask questions. You'll get to know, because by getting to understand at least some of the underpinnings culturally, you will then be able to better relate to that player. You'll be able to better one-on-one, as you were saying, coach them in a way that works for them. Like Leon Draisaitl, I've heard my buddies in Germany that I grew up with in Toronto tell me about Draisaitl 13 years ago. And they're both very different buddies. One is Russian Jewish from Toronto. The other one's Italian from Malton. And we played together since we were eight. And they gave me their take. Weeksy, Leon Draisaitl, blah, blah, blah. Weeksy, Mo Sider, wait till you see him. And they were there, they saw. But there's the point that I'm making is, if you don't understand that, all of a sudden Draisaitl comes, he's on your team, he's on your bench, and you're coaching him like you would a white Canadian player that's from Belleville, Ontario. It's a very different thing.
Right.
It's so different. So that's really key for me. The soft skills, imperative right now in sports and in business and in life, quite frankly.
All right. So here's a question I'm dying to ask you. I'm going to dive under the table.
Go.
Felix Potvin, Ken Reggett, Ed Belfour,
yep.
Dominic Hasek, Grant Fuhr, Curtis Joseph.
Sick. Unreal.
Like, you grew up watching phenomenal goaltenders.
Yes.
That took their teams to win. Chris Osgood, we can debate whether Chris Osgood was a phenomenal goaltender or not.
I know. Wazzy's in that category.
Lundqvist.
Yep.
I have this debate with friends all the time now.
Ask it.
So here's my question for you, and then I'm going to ask the real question.
Okay.
Do you think there are more goaltenders that could lead their team to Stanley Cups or more quarterbacks that could lead their teams to Super Bowls?
I would say there are more. In today's game, are you talking specifically?
Right now, today, on June 9th, 2024.
Quarterbacks, right now.
Right. So what the bleep happened?
Okay.
Because we grew up.
Love where you're going. Don't hurt this. I love this. Stay there.
What has happened?
Stay there.
We had these kids growing up in Chicoutimi. Like, Chicoutimi was like the goaltending farm. We had goalie, like, him. Somebody said the other day,
Stefan Fassette, Felix, you had my guy Eric Fichaud, you had Marc Denis.
Sorry, I even forgot down in Florida.
Yes.
Roberto Luongo, right? Yep. Like, the guy in Tampa.
Abby Bullen, Vasilevsky.
So, what's happened?
Okay.
Like, where has the goalie gone?
Okay. Okay, I always look at the parallel, and I'll often reference, especially for our American audience down here, quarterback/goalie, goalie/quarterback/pitching. Right?
Mm-hmm.
To your point, let me use baseball first. You and I are in the generation where we saw starters with big arms that would pitch deep into games. Pedro, Randy Johnson, Rocket, Clemens.
Yeah.
Hey, Jamie Moyer, Tom Glavine, everybody in Atlanta, basically.
Yep.
I can go on and on for these guys and they would pitch deep into games. You remember?
Yeah, of course.
Dave Stewart.
All these guys
wanted the ball, right?
Yep.
Hey, the manager would look at them. They wouldn't even look at the manager. Hey, I'm focused. Give me seven. Give me eight innings. I'm going. Then we had this kind of regression, maybe like a change in philosophy, money ball, analytics. The pitch count. We can't have them pitch beyond six innings, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was a major shift.
Yeah.
Okay. Then from the goalie standpoint, to your point, hey, these guys were playing 60, 65, 66, in certain cases, 70 games a year. That was like a thing. And I remember when I came out of junior out of the OHL, it was a big deal for me in the American League to hit 60 something games fresh out of junior. Like that was 60 plus. Next year, whatever, 50 plus. Same thing. I'm like, oh, okay. And then that was the thing once I got to the league. Hey, I want to play 55, 60, 65 games. And there's been a major shift to your question in now where it's like, maybe your starter's going to play 48. Maybe they're going to play 45 and we're going to preserve them. Maybe they're going to play 52. And with that, the way that the mentality and the approach and the way teams coach goalies has become very different. And the kind of new cultural norm is that my starter is going to play anywhere between 45 to 55. And then either my two and or three or my 1A and or guy that my three from the minors will play the balance of the games. So that's what's happened. It's just been a major shift in the coaching, goalie coaching specifically, and then the teams with their analytics department and gone, hey, listen, I played with Marty. Marty played all the time. I play with Artur Zerbe, I told you. Archie played all the time. I played with Hank, Henrik Lundqvist. He played all the time. Luongo, he played all the time. I've also played with Happy Boone too. He wanted to play all the time. And those are some of the guys you just mentioned, right? So, yeah. And not excluding Belfour, Patrick Waugh, Cujo, Dom, Vernon, all these other guys, Ozzie. But it's a different Olaf Kolzig. It's just been a major transformation. They coach them differently. The teams approach it differently. Their analytics departments have a big say. Oh, back-to-backs, the odds are. But I remember playing 3-3 in the minors, man. And that was no team playing except for the Vipers. But you know that. That was like a Friday in Rochester, a Saturday in Syracuse, and whatever.
Sunday afternoon in
at Broome County Coliseum. Right? Exactly, which is 3 and 2.5 days. So it's the mentality has really changed around it. And I'm not sure that it's for the better, to be honest with you.
Okay, fine. I'll grant you that.
Yeah.
But quantity and quality don't seem to be adding up, my friend.
I agree.
So I agree. You're telling me that we've given up on quality.
Yes.
Sacrifice of quantity. But yes. I'm telling you that I look around the league and I'm going, where's the quality? Like,
well, that's what I said. We've given up on quality to sacrifice for the quantity. It makes no sense. I wouldn't do it. I'm not a believer in it myself. Okay.
So it's a team sport. It's a copycat sport. Anyone that watched last night's game that says, how do you build a hockey team, says you got to build from the net out. The end. Full stop.
Okay. Pause. Great point. And I've often said this, and everybody you mentioned are guys that some of them, I had their posters on the wall, man. Before I played against Ken Reggett or an Alan Bester when he was with Orlando Solar Bears or whoever, or, you know, playing against Cujo and Belfour and whatever, all these legends down at the other end, Patrick Waugh, Grant Fuhr. Remember, they were on my freaking wall in my bedroom back home. Now, all of a sudden, flash forward, I'm playing against them in certain cases, then with them. All that to say, Kirk McLean, all that to say, what ended up happening now, I'm a true believer in the fact that they're coached to not have to play a high volume of games. I feel like they're overcoached in a way. And what I mean by that is a lot of times you're trying to force and impose a certain technical element into the goalies, which then takes away from their natural instinct to stop pucks. And when you see that, that really is stunting the goalie's progression. And to me, their ability to play at a higher volume of games and play more games, because now everything is so overstructured. Now I got to go down. I'm at an RVH on the post. Why aren't I standing on the post? Why aren't I look intimidating on the post? The puck's over there on the friggin' half wall. Why am I crouching down looking for quarters on the ice? That doesn't make sense. So they've been very overcoached. And again, I don't like the shift in the fact that, you know, 50 games is the new 65. Of yesteryear. I don't believe in that myself. I don't like that trend. I'm with you on that.
Well, I don't like the something else, and it ain't shift, I can tell you that. So in law school, they teach us never ask a question that you don't know the answer to. So while you were talking, I looked up the answer.
Yeah.
I am not a stats guy. I'm not an analytics guy. Do you have any idea, without looking up, how many games Bobrovsky played this year?
I would say Stolar's had a big year too. I would say Bob's played 54.
Played 58.
There we go. Yeah.
This is a copycat league.
Yeah.
I rest my case.
I agree.
So here's my question.
Yeah.
Where are these goalies? Where are the goalies? Like, fine. You and I both know. If you could find a stud who can play 50 games.
Yes.
Every single GM is going to shut every analytics guy up and say, find me the guy that can play me 50 games and I'm going to ride him for 50.
Okay. Pause. Brilliant. Brilliant point. Brilliant question. Here's the thing now. The way that they're coached now, or the way that they're kind of coddled and overprotected now, that's become even more rare. That's why.
They're not welcoming them that way. They're not developed to have stamina. They can't stop a puck. Like, what am I missing?
Developing them that way. They
what
are not.
Way?
Okay. Let me give you an example.
I'm missing. What am I missing?
Like, let me give you an example. Let me use a vehicle for example. I mentioned Land Rover earlier. I'm not paid. We've driven a lot of them. I'm not paid by Land Rover. Okay. Disclaimer. Okay. Land Rover has their iconic Defender, the Defender for years, the Defender, Land Rover Defender. Old school heritage, workhorse farms, beach, this, commercial applications, whatever, rural, this, big jobs. Okay. When Land Rover rebranded the Defender and re-released the Defender, which we had a couple of them, they're new, they're softer, they're rounder, they're easier to drive, they're not as hardcore. And for the traditionalists, a lot of them were ticked. Land Rover, why? Why? What did you do to the Defender? Oh my God, how did you, why do you release this? What's going on? What happened? What happened to the heritage, the purposefulness, the utility? What is this? And I'll tell you, there's a guy by the name of Sir Jim Ratcliffe who owns Ineos, and you see them on the side of Louis Hamilton's car. He's part owner of Manchester United, and he owns Ineos. He started building the Defender himself, and it's now called the Ineos Grenadier, and it's the old school Defender. So this is what I'm saying. If you stop building them that way, you can't expect to go to the showroom and buy them. Okay, That's what happened with goaltending.
Kevin, I get it. But what are you telling me? They're no longer teaching kids what? That they have to play 60 games?
Yeah.
So what is it that they're teaching them? Play a game, take a game off?
Play 45. If you're the true one, you could play 45. You could play 48.
Okay, so stop for a second.
Yeah.
I hear your example about pitching. I hear all of this.
Yes.
Okay. You've been around the game forever.
Yes.
Do you visit kids who play either at, let's call it 12 to 20? Do you see those kids playing?
Yeah, I do. Not as much, but yeah, I do.
Okay. You line 30 of them up. Mm-hmm. You walk down the line of 30. There's kids that want the ball, and there's kids that want it 50% of the time.
This is right.
So I don't care what you teach them. I don't care how they've been trained. You know this as well as I do. Okay? You find that kid. And by the way, you find the kid, you find the coach, you find the GM. That if 20-year-old Kevin pitches a shutout one night, and I don't care what any analytics guy says, the next night, he's going back in the bleeping net.
Jonah, hold it. Here's
right or wrong? No, forget the coach.
You're right. I'm amplifying your point.
But here's the thing. Supply and demand. Where's the supply? We don't have those guys. Okay. Where are they?
Okay. You don't really have as many of them, but you also have to be able to identify them. Can I give you a story for the viewers?
Let me give you a concrete story. I'll let you give me my story, but answer my question. Where are they? Why don't we have them?
And here's the concrete story.
And why can't we find them?
2015 Stanley Cup Final, Tampa Bay, Chicago. Okay?
Yep.
If you recall, Ben Bishop was hurt, his groin is something, something was injured on Ben Bishop, who was great for Tampa, as you know. They have this Russian kid. He's 19, just turned 20, which means he could have been a junior still, right?
Yeah.
He ends up getting in. I thought it was game five or whatever game it would have been in Chicago. He gets in the net. His name happens to be Andre Vasilevskiy.
Right.
Now, let me take you back to, I believe it was the 2015 draft or 2014 draft. Yeah, double check. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was 2012. Anyways, Andre Vasilevskiy's draft year. Tampa's goalie coach is my guy, France Jean, a brother from Quebec. Prior to the draft, I'm like, France, who are you taking? You guys are going to take a goalie. Are you taking, who are you going to take? Vasilevskiy, don't say anything. What? Vasilevskiy, don't say anything. What? He's special. I'm like, wait, you're not taking Malcolm? You're not taking Malcolm Subban? He's talented, but Vasilevskiy, don't say anything. Next thing you know, Andre Vasilevskiy, the draft. Spring it forward to the cup final. He plays in the net. I think they lost 2-0 at Chicago, maybe 3 at empty netter. But he played really well. So we're back at Tampa's practice rink. You know, I do the entire final and go back and forth. We're back at Tampa's practice rink in Brandon. I go up to him. I'm like, hey, man, you're 20? You just played in the Stanley Cup final. He's like, yeah, you know, yeah, I played. I'm like, how did you feel? Yeah, good. Yeah, I was good. You know, I felt good. Just, yeah. And I'm thinking to myself, this guy's a different bird.
Right.
And to your point, I'm in the bowels of Madison Square Garden with my guy, the great Henrik Lundqvist. And it's after a Ranger game. I go in the dressing room. I'm like, Hanky, what do you think? He's like, that guy over there is the best goal in the world. I'm like, who? He's like, Vasilevskiy. He's like, the best. The best. So you also have to, getting back to your point, one has to be able to identify them.
Oh, come on.
You have to be able to identify them.
How many teams are in the league now? 32?
32. Soon to be 34. Maybe going to get to 36. But God, you have to be able to identify them.
But where are these scouts? You've got all these scouts. They can't find these. Can you hear me for a second? Okay, listen to me for a second.
Do you not hear coaches and people say, I don't know anything about goaltending? What? You heard it. Come on, Jonah. You've been around. You hear that. They're like, I don't know.
Well, I know. But where was the guy that found all these French? There was a guy that, you know his name. I don't remember. The guy that found all these guys in Chicoutimi. Whatever his name.
Who's been there.
Yeah.
Francois-Benoit Allaire.
Okay. So hear me out here.
Frankie and Benoit Allaire. Both should be in the Hall of Fame.
Okay. Can you imagine this scenario?
Yeah.
You're on an NHL team.
Yeah.
You're the backup goalie.
Yeah.
You're in the playoffs.
Yeah, I can imagine it because I've been there. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The starter goes down. You go in.
Yeah.
In the middle of a game, you go in.
Yeah.
You win.
Yeah.
They put you in the next game. You win.
Yep.
Game seven comes and you go, I'm a little sore. I can't go tonight.
That's the essence of it.
So, how is that allowed? Like, that guy should be on the next boat to Siberia.
That is the essence of it. And this is
how that allowed to happen. Like, that guy should never play in North America again. Am I wrong?
You're not wrong. And here's my thing with that, right? That's what I'm telling you. I saw guys, remember, Cooge, Belfour, Pattywaugh, Marty, Dom, Grant, Kolzig, there's a few others, Mike Vernon, even for an undersized guy, Ozzie. Do you know how much those guys were playing? Those guys
the injuries they were playing with?
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. That
we used to make fun. I'm sorry, I'm a little passionate. We used to make fun of baseball players that were playing with hangnails. And correct. We hear about guys that scored game-winning goals on broken legs. Both those things are wrong, right? We should be a little bit more empathetic. We should be a little softer. But I'm sorry, you're in the playoffs. It's game seven. Barring a concussion or something really broken, that's what you dream of. We all dreamt of it. Now, I never dreamt of being a goalie. But if you're a goalie and your team's going to game seven, isn't that what you were dreaming of in your backyard? on playing street hockey. Isn't that the opportunity you want? And you if you're a coach or a GM and your guy goes, I'm a little sore today, I can't go. Like, isn't that you saying to the team psychologist, we got a problem here?
Yes. And you know what? I can tell you this. There's a Hall of Fame goalie that I played with that had a little bit of that earlier in his career and had to get through that. And I won't say that I won't say his name just based on our great relationship and our friendship. But he was able to get over that and get through that, hence him making the Hall of Fame. But here's the thing, right? Here's the thing. I remember 03-04, I played 66 games, okay, for Carolina. Six shutouts, I don't know, whatever, 9-12 save percentage. We didn't even make the playoffs. We missed the playoffs by like 30-something points. It cost Paul Maurice his job. It was my best individual year, personally. But more importantly, our team was nowhere near what we were the year before we got to the final. Jonah, I kid you not, I tear my thumb ligament. Won't be able to see the scar. I tear my thumb ligament at like game 40-something. In my blocker hand, which you know you hold like a kind of like a trigger, right? So it stabilized, these two fingers really stabilize your index and your thumb, stabilize your goalie stick. Our then general manager at the time, Jimmy Rutherford, currently a Vancouver. Jimmy, he's like, well, Weeksy, why don't you get the surgery? I'm like, Jimmy, not doing it. Then he was on my agent, Paul Theofanis. He's like, hey, man, if he tore his thumb ligament, he can't hold the goalie stick. I'm like, nah, Jimmy, not doing it. I'm playing. I was getting shot up with Toradol, as players, you know, different athletes, to your point. From that point until game 66 down here against the Florida Panthers in 03, okay? And I had bonuses, and it was a contract year. My contract was expiring, and I had bonuses. I'm in the net. Nope, I'm practicing. Nope. And practice, they wouldn't shoot me up now. So imagine, imagine every shot off the stick, your hands like my, it's like, and you know how guys are, and you know how the players, your teammates are, oh, you're injured, I'm shooting there. That's exactly where I'm going to shoot because I can score there, right? That's kind of the downside of being a goalie. So all that to say, I play the whole time. I keep getting these bonuses. They're cumulative. So I keep, you know, hitting these bonus targets. Ultimately, by the last game, it's game 82. I'm supposed to start. I need 20 minutes, Jonah. Bear with me. I need 20 minutes for this bonus, another bonus trigger. Archer's Irby is like, Weeks, you're going to start the game? I'm like, no, I'm not starting. We go up 4-0 on the Panthers. We chase my man, Roberto Luongo, from the net, which hardly happened. We're up 4-0. Second period, they come back and they score six. All the guys are looking at me on the bench like, bro, are you going in? Like, what's going on? Remember, I need 20 minutes.
Right.
So we come in the second intermission. I'm like, okay, I'm going to play the third for sure. Here's what happens. 13 minutes and something in the TV timeout in the third. Coach Maurice is like, Weeksy, get in there, big boy. I'm like, what? So I go in there now. I go in there. Make some stops. I'm kicking. We come back. We score 6-5. We come back at 6-6. Here what happened. We go into OT. It finishes as a tie. It's the last tie on record in the NHL. 6-6. April 4th, my birthday, 03. So I'm thinking, okay, well, I got the bonus for sure. I got the bonus, right? And I played 18 minutes and 30 whatever seconds. So I call my agent out back of the arena after the game. I'm like, hey, man, blah, blah, blah. He's like, what a wild game. Holy shit, bro. I'm like, so I got the bonus, right? He's like, nah, Kev. I'm like, what? I go, what? He goes, no, you didn't get that bonus tonight. I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, well, they didn't play you the 20 minutes. You're not going to get the bonus. I'm like, ah. But point is, I played on for a good 20-something starts plus all those practices, and it's not unique to me. I don't want to be whatever.
I got it.
You know, there's a lot of the hardcore players that are doing it, right, and that have done it. But it's in that, to your point, in this new kind of environment, doesn't happen as often.
All right, last goalie question, then we're going to move on in the interest of your time.
Ask away. I'm solo today.
So you seem like you're a different cat. Most goalies that I know have the reputation of being a little bit of an odd dog. That's not news to you.
That's not news. You know, It is such an all-consuming position. I mentioned what it was like literally being like eight, playing AAA at Chesswood Arena or St. Mike's. And really, that doesn't change when you're playing junior, when you're playing in the minors professionally, you're playing pro, or you're playing college hockey, or you're in the show. It doesn't change.
So here's my question then.
Yeah. Okay.
If it is changing, like yes, you said, and the sure, coaching is changing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is the psyche of a goalie changing so that the kids are a little less?
Yes. Yes.
Unique?
Yes. It's changing in that respect. Yes. Because I don't feel like they have to be
alone on the island so much.
Yeah. And Rottweilers. You know, there's a lot of, in our era, a lot of goalies, a lot of us were foaming at the mouth. Like, even if it didn't always look that way. Like, Marty was like that, but you wouldn't know that based on Marty Brodeur's disposition. But Patrick Waugh, you knew Patrick was like that. Cujo, Smiley, same thing, but he was like that. Henrik Lundqvist, same thing. Broadway model, but he's like that. Trust me. Luongo, like that, underneath the surface. Grant Fear, Smiley, but he was like that. I can go on and on. But that was a part of it.
Right.
That was a part of it. That you had to be wired. Like, nobody had to tell me to go on the ice extra. Nobody had to tell me as a kid to go to power skating, go to goalie school, try to go to free ice, get extra ice. It was just how a lot of us were wired at the time. And as a result of that, I think, again, we were kind of like Rottweilers in a sense. Jonathan Quick, very much that way. Still very much that way. Had an unreal year this year for the Rangers. Unreal. Hall of Fame lock. It's kind of changed as we've talked about, and as a result, that's kind of changed too, hand in hand with that. Yeah.
All right. So, in the interest of your time, let's take on some quick hits.
Okay.
Game one of the Stanley Cup Finals was last night.
Yeah.
I don't think it unfolded surprisingly to anybody. The better goaltender carried the day. Tougher team seemed to prevail.
Sure.
Edmonton peppered them with shots.
Yes.
Do you see it unfolding any differently over the next X number of games?
I think the adjustments are for Edmonton to make.
Of course. They right? lost. They yeah. lost.
But not even that. Like, they peppered him, as you said, and they got some good looks. Bobrovsky was money last night.
Mm-hmm.
But as EJ Raddick and I said on the NHL International broadcast last night, there are a lot of things Edmonton can hang their hat on. They were faster. They played the tempo. They created a lot of great A's. But the adjustments that I'm looking to see from the Oilers in game two tomorrow, are they going to get to the net more with anybody that's not named Zach Hyman?
Right.
Are they going to create enough distraction and discomfort in and around Sergei Bobrovsky? Because Bob's a 6'2", but he's not 6'5". He's not a 6'6 guy like his backup Stolarz, who can see over the screens because he's a freaking redwood tree himself, right? He can see over and around them. And Bob plays a very low style, and he's great down low. And so far in the playoffs, he's only surrendered one goal, five hole, as EJ said on our show last night. So all that to say, are they going to get in and around him more, A? And are they going to start shooting high more? Because he's so good down low. He's so gifted down low. But it's almost like as many good looks as they had, when they had the time, a lot of times they were shooting low. They didn't shoot high. Those are two offensive adjustments I want to see if they make in game two.
Okay. There's 30 other teams watching.
Yeah.
Copycat league.
Yep. You're right on that.
There's money to be spent this offseason.
Yep.
First time.
Yep.
What changes do you look to be copied in the offseason, as these teams are now sitting there drooling, and we're late. It's June 9th today. The offseason's coming quick, and the preseason's coming quicker. So what should we look for?
Number one, I would say this is the summer of unrestricted defensemen.
Okay.
And there are a lot of good ones. Who
are your top three?
Hard to say on any given day, but I would say this. Pesci, Brady Shea, Sean Walker. I can kind of go on and on. There's so many of them that are unrestricted right now that can be good ads for any team.
Okay.
Okay. That certainly wants to bolster the defense. Toronto Maple Leafs certainly should be chief among them, I would say. Another thing I would look for is maybe, just maybe, some of the teams now understand the value of having Jam on your team. And what does that mean? That's Sam Bennett to me. Bennett the menace. That's Sam Bennett. That's a Matthew Tkachuk-type player. Those type of players that can get in there, be disruptive on the forecheck, hit, in the case of Sam Bennett, score, skate, shoot, hit, fight, whatever you want to do. But have more Jam in your group, because the regular season is built for the artistes. The postseason is built for those maybe artistes that have the Jam to make the plays and for your blue-collar players. So I think that the people I'm talking to, which are many, a lot of them want to add that element or more of that element where those players can still play meaningful roles, but they have that kind of sandpaper and Jam to their game.
If you had to make one prediction of a shocking move that people are going to go, holy crap, I didn't see that coming this offseason, what would it be?
I think it's the Colorado Avalanche do something huge. In light of what's happening with Valer Nichushkin, you know, hopefully I root for the health and safety and mental well of all the players. So hopefully he can get all the help he requires, and hopefully he can find the strength and resolve to heal and get on the right, stay on the right path for him.
Okay.
Life-wise, forget hockey. But I think for the Colorado Avalanche, obviously Gabe Landeskog is attempting a massive comeback with that major knee injury and the unique surgery that he had. But I look for them to be major players.
Okay. You are, I believe, first to drop the bomb on Atlanta.
Yes.
3.0.
And Utah.
I'll fight you on that one, because I think I tweeted that one first, that Arizona was going to move to Utah, but whatever.
But I said Utah was getting a team. I didn't say that okay. It was Arizona, to be fair. Okay.
It's all good.
That's fair. That's accurate.
You're an actual insider. I'm an idiot. So
please.
You've
got three more scoops.
No, I don't think so.
You just don't break all of them. That's all.
That's right. How confident are you that, A, the league is going to expand?
Very.
And how soon?
Within 3 years.
It'll happen in 3 years. It'll be announced within 3 years.
I think it'll be announced within three. That gives me more cover.
It'll be announced within 3 years. You froze there for a second.
Yes. I think it'll be announced within 3 years.
Okay. And how confident are you that Atlanta will be one of how many teams?
I think if I had to put the odds, I'd say north of 55% that they will be.
Okay.
Of course, a lot of it depends on the arena and the situation. There's two groups. Perhaps it's the gathering at Forsyth County, which I initially broke. I think if they can come to, resolution with the county, and if they can get that all done. But I'm very bullish on the fact that there can be a team there. I'm very bullish on the fact that there will be a team in Houston. And Utah was one of the other teams I mentioned, and they've gotten their team in Arizona, which you had broken with them going there. And there's a ton of interest, as you know. Listen, you're speaking to a lot of the same people. There's like even in speaking to Commissioner Bettman, and we did this, I held this forum. We held a forum that I emceed with him during the outdoor games at MetLife Stadium for Amazon Web Services. And part of the discussion in our forum was around this said expansion. And we had some people from, some people from your former employer that were asking, they're like, hey, what's going on with this? We kind of had this combo. There is no shortage of expressed interest from interested parties in aspiring to own an NHL team. It's the best deal on the street in the Big Four. It's the best deal on the street. There's cost certainty. It's hyper advantageous for ownership just based on the way the salary cap's set up. And quite frankly, the only way it's going to continue trending upwards. So I'm very bullish on expansion. I think it's going to happen. I've played for expansion teams. Let me be clear. I was drafted by one down here in South Florida. I played for Tampa. And I played for a relocation team in the Carolina Hurricanes that moved from Hartford. So I've kind of had the gamut. And I played for an original six team in the Rangers. So I've kind of had the gamut, but I see expansion for sure. I'm very bullish on it, and it will happen.
I hate to ask the question because every fan's least favorite topic, but the union actually seems to have gotten it right with their current leader. Good for them.
Yeah.
Maybe not so good for the fans, because that could mean that when the current CBA expires, there could be another Bettman-esque lockout. Do you see that happening?
I don't necessarily see it. I'm not ruling it out. I don't see it happening only because we're on an upward trajectory now. And this is a real unique time. So think about this. You're out there in Seattle. We spoke yesterday. I digress. You've got Seattle with a Crown Jewel arena, and now you have a new team. You got Vegas with a Crown Jewel set up, and now they've won a Stanley Cup. You've got Utah that's just come aboard now, and they're, you know, going to be, I believe, they have the chance to be an impressive franchise. You now have Connor Bedard in Chicago. We're trying to resuscitate San Jose that's fallen on hard times after their long run of consistency and playoffs every year, as you do. You also now have, and you and I both being, you know, Americans now and living in the States, you have a lot of upward momentum, record numbers of girls and boys playing the game, and people in general, from grassroots up in the United States. Two massive TV deals with, obviously,
one's about to expire.
Correct. And us and ESPN. Mm-hmm. The Canadian one about to expire. So I think with all of those factors, I can't envision a scenario where there's a lockout.
So what's the issue for the issue for the players is escrow.
Escrow is right? A big issue for the players, massive. I hated it as a player. I hated it. I really didn't like it at all. A lot of players, we felt that way. A lot of the current players still feel that way. It's frustrating. Look, I'm going to say this. I remember being a young kid growing up, and there was a show on CBC called Venture, if you recall. Mm-hmm. And I had a teacher, an introduction, intro to business. His name was Mr. Manga. He was great. And he was spicy, but he was great. And he was entertaining. And he always talked about supply and demand, supply and demand. He always talked about real estate before real estate was a thing. This is early 90s in Scarborough. And he was preaching this. He was talking about it. And when I look at those things and I look at the supply and demand, there's only 32 teams. There's only 700 and something plus players. Okay. When I look at the real estate's a big part of a lot of these teams now. It's a big part of their success, their financial picture, et cetera. You ultimately can't kill or dilute the golden goose and the product. Mm-hmm. And those two things are intertwined. And to me, from a player standpoint, players are so unique in what they do, their ability to perform at the level that they can and that they do. We can't be punitive and have a mentality where we're punitive about what their earnings are. Because for the folks in New York and Metro New York like us, nobody's capping, pardon me, what the real estate values are in Tribeca. Nobody's doing that in West Village. Nobody's doing it in Soho. Nobody's doing it down here next door in Bayshore in Miami. And nobody's doing it across the bridge in Miami Beach. Nobody's doing it in West Palm. So ultimately, it's a free enterprise market system. I think a rising tide floats all boats. It's better for our league and for our sport when it's continuing to thrive. And the players are the product that take, you know, that have a big impact on all that. So that's my overview on it. I'll always think that way. We're business owners. I believe in free market enterprise. And I certainly believe in the ability for people to be hustlers and to earn as much as they can morally, legally, and ethically. That's the way I feel.
Well, to me, you're doing the most important job, the most value for the game.
Thank you.
Sits with people like you, and I'll tell you why. The only way, in my opinion, the game grows. The audience in this country continues to grow.
100.
We've proven time and time again. 100%. And the audience is not going to like hearing this, but the numbers sometimes don't lie.
Sure.
The Canadian audience for the Leafs Bruins game game seven was, I think, around 5 million people.
They just shot five. Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
And the last game of the last series of the semifinals for Edmonton was around two.
Mm-hmm.
That tells you everything there is to be known. And we'll see what happens with the finals with the Canadian team in there.
No, Bobby Paul, I love that. And I love that you said it because not enough people say that. So please continue. Great. Great point.
The NHL is not the NFL.
Correct.
So Canadians are fans of their team.
100.
The only way that the NHL is going to somehow chase down 6.7 billion or 76 billion that the NBA is about to sign.
Yep, I know.
As if more Americans start watching the game. And the only way that happens is if the Amazons, the Apples, the Netflix continue to cover the game.
Yes.
And in my opinion, the game right now is the best it's been perhaps in my lifetime, mm-hmm. where you've got a pretty good marriage of skill and grit. It's got mm-hmm. to get, it's got to improve a little bit.
Sure.
But they sure. have, and many people aren't going to like this, but the American networks are doing a better job covering the game than the Canadian networks are. TNT, ESPN, ABC, their broadcasts right now are better than they are up in Canada. They just are. The shows are better. They are. And that gives me hope because I'm not one of those who hopes American like my game. I don't care. But if you want the game to grow and flourish and compete, it is going to take more eyeballs in this country.
Yeah.
And you got to get more kids following it.
No, you nailed a lot of high points there. The growth, just based on sheer population, but it's also, you know, again, we're Metro New Yorkers / Miamians, right? And ultimately, many things in the world are driven by the ecosystem here. So we could talk a lot of different sectors, whether it's pop culture, music, entertainment for sure, sports and entertainment, sports business. And I'm not saying it's standalone, not anything to discredit London, Germany, Paris, Switzerland, Italy, France, you know, whatever, different places, Asia, whatever, different parts of the globe in any way. But when something hits here, it hits.
300 million people.
Right? And the influence is 30x that.
Mm-hmm.
So you get bona fide. If you're Drake and you're back home and you're on Degrassi and you're Drake and you can still rap and you're talented and you're skilled and you're multifaceted, you're okay, well, you're Aubrey. But when the NBA players are playing you, when the NFL players are playing you, when other people are co-signing and you're on Jimmy Fallon, now you're actually Drake,
mm-hmm.
right? In the eyes of the world, not in your terms of your ability because it was there. So I agree with that. And I think we have this upward trajectory and this opportunity. Look, here's something that's interesting. You mentioned something about, you know, you referenced being an insider, and I know you're one yourself. And it's kind of a
role. I'm an idiot. He's wrong. I'm an idiot. Keep going.
Stop. And it's one of the tools in my Swiss Army knife that I wanted to add and worked on adding. And ultimately with that, I've had over 200 million views to date on my breaking news or any type of news-related stuff. Well, what does that say? What does the data tell me? And, you know, I employed this company called Zoom with a PH. They're great. They do unreal analytical data analysis on sports and business and teams and leagues and clubs and stuff and partners and media. And I paid out of my own pocket because I wanted to get a sense of what this looked like. Who's tuning in to see these videos? Like, who's tuning in to see any of my news? And what the data told me was ultimately NHL fans want more. Not less, more. And it was really humbling because I'm like, well, the NFL gives them more. They're doing more. It's around the clock coverage even when they're not even playing. It's off season, this wall-to-wall coverage. There's this show, there's that show, there's this, there's that. So ultimately, that was really telling for me. And it was kind of, again, a little bit of a eureka moment where I was like, wow, okay, well, there's X amount of these fans, and so X amount of them were in the Metro New York. X amount of them were in Philly. This amount was in Washington. This amount were in LA. This amount were in Pacific Northwest. And it was very insightful. So we have to continue feeding what the NHL and the hockey fan want. And not only the existing fan, but also some potential new fans as well, or some of the casual, as you said, to continue growing the game. And that has to be done here / internationally. I agree.
Well, I think I'll finish with this. One, you earn trust, right? Yeah. You don't throw 50,000 things at the wall hoping one or two stick.
Right.
Things that you talk about come to fruition. So that means you earn trust. Two,
yeah.
The most important part, and the things that I think people are missing, where the biggest opportunity is, the NHL has great stories to tell.
Big time.
And the stories are the players.
100%.
And where I think the Canadian networks have missed the boat, to me, is Wayne Gretzky sits on a panel with TNT.
Yeah.
And they've turned him into a broadcaster.
Right.
And in Canada, he's still just the kid from Brantford.
No, that's a good point. Wow. Both of us have a fluency of, you know.
Because I can now watch him, and he's sitting with a pad, and he's interrupting the panel, and he's got takes.
Yeah.
And the fact that that did not happen on Hockey Night in Canada, to me, is criminal. Yeah. I'm serious.
No. I'm doubling down on your point, and I think it's brilliant. And here's why. Like, the cultural nuances are very unique. Obviously, back in Canada, a lot of times things are local. They're smaller. They're intimate. They're a little aw shucksy at times. We can skew that way. Here in the States, more. Let's be more. Let's accomplish more. Let's be bigger. Let's be capitalistic. We can do this. Let's build this. Is it not here? Let's improve it. Let's elevate it. And, you know, culturally, they're very different. Those are two polar opposite views and viewpoints and kind of approaches. And it's funny, last year during Stanley Cup final, I was at the great Michael Jordan's Grove 23 golf course, courtesy of my boy Brad Richards, up here in South Florida. And Gretz was there. And here's where I'm going to say, which is interesting to your point. All I heard when I sat at the card table was Gretz and MJ mutual admiration. You're the GOAT. No, you're the GOAT. No, you had all these records. No. You had all those records. And Air Jordan was like, they called you the great one. They only called me Air. They called you the great one. And I'm listening to these guys, literally, man, I'm getting goosebumps here at the house. I'm listening to these guys talk about the game, talk about practice, talk about their parents, talk about their approach to the game, to the point to where I'm going to share this with your viewers. Gretz was crying. And it was mentioned to our dads, and, you know, my dad's still around, and his dad had passed, and Jordan's dad had passed, and it was so moving and so passionate about their family, but about the sport and their respective sports and sports in general and what sports have done for them in their lives, that, to your point, if we had a mic and any just for the audio, forget even the video, which was so compelling, I'm telling you, that would have gotten, I don't know, 50, 100 million views. I literally have goosebumps up and down my body right now.
Way higher.
Right? Like, honest to goodness, it was so riveting.
Come on, the best TV I saw this year in the game, no joke.
Yeah.
Wayne Gretzky interviewing Paul Coffey after a game.
Yeah, that was great. In the post game?
Yeah.
Remember that? That was great. That was great. And you know, this is where I have to say this. I got to kind of walk a tightrope, not as tight as I did when I was playing, because that was a tightrope over Niagara Falls, but it's still a tightrope nonetheless. I think what people are missing and what some of our people could do better in positions of influence in and around the media side of it, as you were alluding to, is you got to really understand the essence of the game. And what I mean by that is, you talked about the stories. This whole thing is rooted in the story. I just told you the story. This whole thing is rooted in story after story after story. Where's the story on Mario Lemieux overcoming cancer and coming back to play? What are we doing? Like, where's the story on some of the, and Henrik Lundqvist had to do it himself with his special that's now, make sure you check it out, Henrik Lundqvist special that's on Netflix about his heart surgery. Jonah, listen to me. I was with Hank. We're at dinner in New York. Okay? So we're at dinner. Next thing you know, and he had his heart surgery. Next thing, an open heart surgery. Next thing you know, he tweets and Instagrams to, great day. He's got his goalie pads and he's got his bag and he's going to skate. That's what they're
going to be. This is 43. Hang on. You got to say that again. Your audio dropped there for a second.
I was with the guy 8 hours before. This is 43 days post open heart surgery. You've got goalie equipment. Mm-hmm. Where are you going and what are you going to do with it? So anyway, I'm like, no, this can't be. So I text him, no answer. I call him. I'm like, yo, Hank, what are you doing? I was just with you. We were just in the city at dinner. You didn't tell me you were skating today. Where were you skating? Why were you skating? He's like, ah, oh, weeksy cat, man. You know, I want to get out there and feel it and feel the. I go, are you skating again? He's like, I'm skating tomorrow. Where, when, what time?
And why?
He was on the air. Exactly. And I'm going to tell you, he was at the rink. He was at a local rink owned by a billionaire, Larry Robbins, in Alpine, New Jersey. He goes, come. Hank goes, come, man. Bring your skates. I might need a shooter. I'm like, what? So I got a tracksuit, goalie skates, player gloves, and a stick. I go there. Jonah, and for the viewers, listen. This guy looked like he was peak. Movements the same. Timing the same. He looked like himself. This was 43 days after open heart surgery. Mm-hmm. It was like, it was mind blowing to me. And that's to your point. There's so many of these amazing stories with these players and people in the game in general, where they're just not being told. And I think a lot of times it's because a lot of our so-called execs and people in different, you got to understand the value of a skate sharpening and what it means. You have to have been there to really understand and why this would be such gold currency for your viewers.
You have to understand that in the digital age, we get the information that we used to wait for on TV every minute.
So
tell the stories that we want to see. Give us access to what you have that we don't have.
Correct. Give us more of what we can't have. Anybody could log on to NHL.com and, oh, they had this many OT losses. They had this many points. There's so many different stats on there.
I don't need to hear insider information. I get it on Twitter. I get it on my podcast. I get it on the radio. I get that in breaking news.
Yes.
He is Kevin Weeks. You can see him on the NHL Network. You can see him on ESPN, TSN. You can hear him on radio stations doing hits. You can follow him on Twitter, Instagram. Are you on TikTok?
Not on TikTok.
We're going to change that. He and his wife have started a new company, a next generation advisory and media company called Speaks. That's S-P-E-E-K-E-S. He is a friend of the show. He's an awesome insider. Again, he's earned your trust by being right way more often than he's not. Kevin, thank you for doing this. We will definitely have you again. It's good to see you. We will see you when I am down next, either in the 212 or the 305. Nice. I hope you have a great rest of the final season. And thank you so much for doing this. And we will see you next time in the press row.
Listen, you're too kind. I got to thank you. Thank you so much for having me on. Keep up the great work. Continue telling a lot of these great stories and doing all that you're doing. Thank you for having me. You're too kind. And I love that you said, we'll do it again, because it doesn't have to be a one and done. Let's do it again. But dinner on me, though.
Hope you enjoyed today's episode of In the Press Row. A little bit of a different take, as things got pretty interesting talking about where we are with goaltending today. Really, really enjoyed my time with Kevin. I think he knows his stuff. He's become one of the more reliable, trustworthy insiders. Love seeing his stuff, especially on Twitter, but certainly like seeing him on ESPN, the NHL Network, and other places. He definitely broke the story on Atlanta becoming a viable market again for the NHL. You can catch him on Twitter, on Instagram. He and his wife have started a pretty cool company called Speaks. That's S-P-E-E-K-E-S. Want to remind everybody, we are very active these days on TikTok. You can find my daily sports takes, sports media takes, especially in addition to other content on TikTok. You can see me at either, you can find me, it's the same account, at YYZ Sports Media or Business Traveler. I love posting there. Please follow along. You'll soon see giveaways from that account. So please follow along, interact. I do lives there as well. You can follow me at YYZ Sports Media on Instagram. And you can obviously follow me on Twitter, where most people do, at YYZ Sports Media. Via email, Jonah at YYZ Sports Media. I'm always looking for guests, love talking to interesting people. We will see you next time here in the Press Row. We will be back doing this regularly. If you have a guest, if you have a question, fire me off an email, reach me on any of those channels. And always, thank you for joining. Please subscribe either on YouTube or here on your favorite podcast channel. And as always, have a good day.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.